The important thing in the joy of love is that this document is very much written for a whole range of family types and for a whole range of people. And in chapter 2 of Amoris Laetitia, he says, faithful to Christ's teaching, we look to the reality of the family today in all its complexity with both its lights and shadows. There is no such thing as the ideal or perfect family. All of our realities are different. So in this room today, there are going to be people here who are single, who are married, who are separated, people with or without children, aunts, uncles, priests, sisters. And this document speaks to all of us in exactly the way that Jesse so beautifully explained, in terms of our contexts, in terms of our reality, in terms of our stories. I suppose in terms of the journey that Jesse described, and that's in a sense represented somewhat in this image, the one defining quality or the disposition that roots all of our journeys, regardless of our circumstances, is tenderness. So I just want us to kind of rest with that kind of image. A child's hand in yours, what tenderness it arouses, what power it conjures. You are instantly the very touchstone of wisdom and strength. So the first question on your sheet there says, what do these images of holding a child or a baby's hand evoke in you? Spend time with this image or experience. Remembered, maybe you remembered from when your children were young, real, as in present now, grandchildren or your own children, or even if it's just imagined. What kind of things are evoked in you when you look at these images? We might just take a moment to just not necessarily share with the whole table, but with maybe just the person sitting beside you. What kind of things come into your heart more than your mind? What comes into your heart when you look at these images and when you remember that experience of holding a small child's hand? Or even if you are lucky enough to remember what it is to be a small child having your hand held. So we'll take a minute just to maybe share with the person sitting beside us. So I hate to break up the very rich conversation, but wouldn't it be lovely just to even have the space to sit in prayer in front of that kind of image? Wouldn't it? And to imagine ourselves held in God's hand in that way, reaching as small children to a father, a mother who loves us, safe and secure. Warmth. It does evoke that sense of security, doesn't it? So the journey we walk, the journey in faith, the journey into our own stories, we walk with a great sense of security. So I suppose it's that sense of security we journey for the next 40 minutes. And we're going to look at three questions. Firstly, who are we? That God is so mindful of us, as the psalmist says. We're going to talk about Pope Francis and his call for a revolution of tenderness. And we're going to say, well, what are the implications in our own lives? If we were to sit sincerely in joy, and that word joy is important, before an image of a small child, of an image of a parent holding a child's hand, or if we, and I'm fortunate to have small children, if I were to use the experience of holding my child's hand as a prayer moment, what would that do? It would revolutionize us. It would revolutionize us in terms of our own lives. It would revolutionize us in terms of our families and in terms of our parishes. So family is relationship, and relationship is a gift. It's a gift with self, with God, with others. And it's very much predicated on having a sense of who I am. Here's a little cartoon. There's the guy, little fella, made in God's own image. Yes, sir. God must have a goofy sense of humour. And doesn't life feel shocking messy for people who are made in God's image? It's hard to believe, and we read it in Scripture, in the book of Genesis, and we read it all over the place. I'm not a Scripture scholar, so I won't quote. But we read it in the book of Genesis, that man and woman created in God's own image. But we feel often messy. Or at least I feel often messy. And so sometimes it's hard to reconcile the messiness of our lives with this sense of who we are in God's eyes. So we need to maybe take a little bit of time to reflect on that. And what I'm going to suggest is that we listen to somebody far better placed to talk about messiness than me, and that's Jean Vanier. And as you know, Jean Vanier is very famous for his work with people with profound physical and intellectual disabilities. And he has something very rich to say in this short video. And I'd really invite you to listen with your heart to some of the things that Jean Vanier is saying here. He's using words like vulnerability, tenderness. He's using words like letting down our barriers. He's using things like, you are beautiful. I love you for who you are. Thank you. And we might just listen, and you can get it on YouTube, and it's well worth sitting with.
To be fully human is really to discover who I am. And who am I? I'm a part of, a member of the huge human family, where we're all brothers and sisters, wherever we come from, whatever our culture, whatever our religion. We were born in weakness, we will grow, and we will die. So the story of each one of us is a story of accepting that we are fragile. To discover who I am is to discover also a unity between my head and my heart. The head, we are called to grow, to understand, and to work through things. But the heart is something else. It's about concerned by others. We were born into a relationship, and that relationship which we all lived is a relationship with our mom, where we were so small, so weak, so fragile, and we heard the words which are the most important and maybe the words we need to hear all our life. I love you as you are. You are my beloved son or my beloved daughter. And this is what gives consistency to people. They know they are loved, and that's what they're seeking for maybe the rest of their lives. So there's the head where we are called to understand, to deepen the laws of the world, of nature, and so on. But there's also the heart. The heart is a very fragile part of us, and terribly fragile in the little child. If the little child is not loved at the moment of his birth and the few months after, there's a deep, deep inner wound. And from that wound comes up anguish, and from anguish comes fighting and wanting to win and to prove that I am someone. Fundamentally, to develop the heart is to see that in each person you are beautiful. You see, the whole thing with human beings is to learn to love. And to love is not to do things for people, it's not to tell people what to do. It's to reveal. What do we reveal? You're important. You might be important in the things you do, but there's something even more important than what you do. It's who you are. And who you are is something about your heart, by being open to others. A heart that is not filled with fear. The problem today is that many people are filled with fear. They are frightened of people, frightened of losing. And because people are filled with fear, They can no longer be open to others. They're protecting themselves, protecting their class, protecting their group, protecting their religion. We're all in a state of protection. To become fully human is to let down the barriers, to open up, and to discover that every person is beautiful. Under all their jobs they're doing, responsibilities, there is you. And you, at the heart of who you are, you're somebody also crying out, does somebody love me? Not just for what I can do, but for who I am. So to be fully human is the development of the heart and the head, and then we can become one, one inside of us. Becoming one inside of us, we can little by little let down the ego, the need to prove that I am better than you. And then I can begin to see in other people, other groups, other religions, other cultures, that people are wonderful. And then we can come and we can work for peace together.
Isn't there so much richness in that? And I think it would be true to say that if we could, and this is part of exactly the reality that Jesse was talking about, if we could journey in terms of our discernment into a sense of ourselves loved, not for all of the things we do or don't do, but for who we are, there would indeed be a revolution in our world. I don't know if you're like me, but I absolutely love looking at pictures of Pope Francis and the way he embraces people and the way he so humorously and in a very self-effacing in some respects way just is himself and allows other people to be himself. There was a lovely picture of him with a little boy who kind of came up to distract him during one of his homilies. And he didn't shoo him away. You could see he was maybe mildly irritated at times, but he didn't express any negativity towards that little boy. And there was something very rich in that. And so Pope Francis and the way he embraces people is in a sense showing us how we can live what Jean Vanier has just described. So who are we to God? In Hosea, we hear that when Israel was a child, I loved him, and out of Egypt I called my son. In Isaiah, can a mother forget the baby at her breast and have no compassion on the child she has born? Though she may forget, I will not forget you. Mothers in the worst of times are witnesses to tenderness. I was having a conversation with my second little girl, and I said to her, Maeve, do you know that there is somebody who loves you more than me? Somebody loves you more than I love you, Maeve. She went like this to me, no way. No one can love me more than you, Mammy. And isn't that a lovely sense that she has of love? And that's the reference point in terms of Jean Vanier that he's giving us, the love of a mother for his, for her child, or a father for his child. Just go back to some of the quotations from Jean Vanier. Weakness, fragility. To be fully human is to discover who I am. I love you as you are my beloved. To see in each person you are beautiful. To learn to love, to reveal you're important, not what you do, but what you are. People are wonderful. So those are the kinds of things we're invited to do. And on the second question on your sheet for you to reflect at home maybe, because we don't really have much time today, is how are you with your own smallness? Now, I happen to be 5'1.5", so I am actually small. But if you're 6'4", there's still at the heart of us all a smallness, a fragility, a vulnerability. How are you with your own deep desire to be loved? And then in terms of maybe moving out to your family and your friends and your parish, how are you with the smallness of others, particularly with the smallness of those with whom you don't always see eye to eye? Those are two really important questions. Jesse took you through three of Francis's key ideas in terms of understanding Amoris Laetitia, the joy of love. What I'm going to do now very quickly is take you through four key documents that will give you a sense of why Pope Francis wrote what he wrote in Amoris Laetitia and the joy of love. So Jesse talked about time greater than space, reality greater than ideas, and discernment and key. And I'd like you to also consider these four texts in terms of understanding this document. The first is the joy of love, or sorry, the joy of the gospel. The second is on the care of our common home. The third is his bull of indiction for the year of mercy. And obviously the fourth is the document itself. And in all of those, he talks about things like, and you can see it in that word cloud, encounter in particular. And Jesse talked about that. He talks about mercy, dignity, ecumenism, environment, the environment, diplomacy, family. And in terms of this encounter, he talks about a revolution of tenderness. And he says that this revolution of tenderness happens through the grace of our relationship with Christ and his saints, and also through the grace of our relationships with one another as his church. So we're just going to look at that, what that means. Now, all of what Pope Francis is saying is, in a sense, built on what has been said before him, including what Pope Benedict wrote in Deus Caritas Est. He wrote that being a Christian is not the result of an ethical choice or a lofty idea. We don't read a book and then say, that seems like a fair religion. Yeah, I think I'll have a bit of Christianity. No. We are people of faith because we've had an encounter with an event, with a person. And that encounter has given us life and has given us a new a horizon and a decisive direction. So it's a relationship. And that's really, really important for Pope Francis as well. When he was asked in his first interview after his election, when he was asked, who is Jorge Mario Bergoglio? He wrote, we never would have been able to say Bergoglio 5 years ago, would we? We can all say it now. It's great. He said, I am a sinner whom the Lord has looked upon. Now, that's what all of us are. And his episcopal motto was lowly but chosen. Lowly but chosen. So that sense that we are who we are, but we are loved. We are chosen. So in that first document in Evangelii Gaudium, he talks about the joy of knowing we are loved by God for all eternity. He talks about how life is complicated. He talks about the importance of resting in God's love. And he talks about loving others as we are loved by God. With Pope Francis, it's always, and in the joy of love, this is the case always, it's always a case of, it's all fine and well, and it's important for us to have a sense of God's love for us. But that sense of God's love for me impels me to love others. Not out of a decision, actually, but because I can't help myself, almost. If I see in the person sitting beside me today, you are beautiful. You are a beloved son or daughter of God. It becomes that little bit easier to love them because it's almost a sense of an overflowing awareness of who God is in my life makes it possible to love others. And so in Evangelii Gaudium, he calls for this revolution of tenderness. The Son of God, by coming flesh, summoned us to the revolution of tenderness. And what does that mean? It means, firstly, that we recognize that every human being is the object of God's infinite tenderness, and he himself is present in their lives. Every person is immensely holy and deserves our love. I was at a conference there recently, and one of the sisters at the conference told me the story of the birth of her third sister. And for ages, the family had been waiting for the birth of this little girl. There was a big gap between the first two and the third. And the whole neighbourhood was coming down with babies. Everyone was having babies. And they were in the family going, why aren't we having our next baby? So the third baby finally arrived. And baptism happened. And everyone went back to the house. And one of the neighbours came in. And she went over to the pram. And she bowed deeply before the baby. Isn't that a beautiful image? She bowed deeply before the baby because she, her sense was that what was in front of her was an immensely holy person, deserving of our love and our respect. In addition, in Evangelii Gaudium, in the joy of the gospel, he says that let us learn to rest in the tenderness of the arms of the Father and our creative, amid our creative and generous commitment. So we're all very busy, and in order for that busyness to make any sense, Pope Francis says we have to learn to rest in the tenderness of the arms of the Father. So a question I do want you to spend a little bit of time discussing is question 3 on your sheet. How are we with this idea of resting? Just resting in God's arms, in the tenderness of the embrace of God. How are we with that in the busyness of parish life? And maybe it's not there, but why is it important? So would that be okay for you to look at that third question there? How are we with this challenge in the busyness of parish life? And if you're not that involved in parish, how are you with this just in the busyness of life in general? Okay? Is that all right for a few minutes? Okay, sorry now to cut short the conversation. The hope is that when we do find time, and myself and Jesse were sitting confessing to one another that we don't actually get as much time as we'd like. Well, Jesse gets a little bit more for a variety of reasons, but because I've 3 small children, it would be safe to say I have hardly time to bless myself. So the times I have to rest in that are few enough, but it is so important that we do that, isn't it? What happens when we don't do it is we become disconnected from the kind of truth that we're called to journey towards. And we start constructing for ourselves a different kind of truth or a different perspective that maybe isn't from God. So once we do rest in that, what happens then in terms of our parishes? Well, there's good news and there's bad news. The good news is we are probably going to find ourselves in very vibrant places. The bad news, which is also good news in a way, is that things get complicated. And this is what Pope Francis says. Now, it's interesting, in Evangelii Gaudium, in the joy of the gospel, he also quotes this in the joy of love. He says, he hopes that we will stop looking for these personal, Jesus hopes that we will stop looking for these personal or communal niches which shelter us from the maelstrom of human misfortune, and instead that we would enter into the reality of other people's lives, and Jess will be talking more about this, and the power of tenderness. Whenever we do that, whenever we sit down with people and meet them in the beauty of, and the messiness of who they are, our lives become wonderfully complicated. There are no black and whites. I found myself in this position a few weeks ago on Facebook, of all things. So one of my friends on Facebook, I wouldn't be particularly close to her, but she put up a blog post about having an issue with one of her sons. He's 6 and he wants to dress like a little girl and he wants to be a little girl. So she's decided that she's going to let him and that she is going to start introducing him to the concept of being a transgender child. And my initial reaction was, my God, that's mad. You know, that's shocking, shocking. That's just horrendous. And I sat with it because, like Pope Francis, my first reaction wasn't the right reaction. I sat with it for a while and I messaged her. And I said to her that I would be praying for her on her journey and that the one thing that was clear from her blog was the deep love she had for her child. But it's complicated because am I then affirming her? Am I saying, you know, you're right, yeah, go down that path with your child. So do I challenge her? Do I affirm her? How am I with somebody in that complicated reality? And that's what Pope Francis, I suppose, is saying when he says the real is greater than ideas, or reality is greater than ideas. And one of the questions to bring back to your parishes is this: how are we with the wonderfully complicated in our parishes? Look at the cartoon, Welcome, First Church. We don't discriminate if you're like us. So how are we with the complicated, really? And that's a massive challenge, because there is that, as Jesse said at the very start of our gathering, these two extremes. A sense of knowing what is true and maybe holding and saying this is the truth, and saying on the other hand, well, actually, new things are good. So where are we with that? And not surprisingly, Pope Francis has an answer and is inviting us into it. And I think it's really beautiful that the answer he gives us is in Mary. He says that the interplay of justice, that sense of wanting the right, and tenderness, contemplation and concern for others, it is what makes the ecclesial community look to Mary as a model of evangelization. He says in Evangelii Gaudium, we implore her maternal intercession that the church may become a home for many peoples, a mother for all peoples, and that the church may be opened to the birth of a new world. It is the risen Christ who tells us, who fills us with a power that lifts us with confidence and unshakable hope. Behold, I make all things new. With Mary, we advance confidently towards the fulfillment of this promise. It would be safe to say that Mary's life was complicated, wouldn't it? Think about it for a moment. It was a complicated life by any standards. So how she dealt with that complication is, for Pope Francis, a model for us. Now, I have a question there that's really a very personal question, and I'm not going to ask you to talk about it. Question five. Do you feel loved for who you are, not just for what you do in your parish, family, home, community? Because it's only to the extent that you feel that you can then love others. So I'm going to leave that question with you for homework and move on to Pope Francis's next document that I want to just mention, which is on care of our common home, Laudato Si. So not satisfied with challenging us to love other people, he also challenges to love all of creation. And he says, every creature is thus the object of the Father's tenderness, who gives it its place in the world. Even the fleeting life of the least of beings is the object of his love. And in its few seconds of existence, God enfolds it with his affection. And there he is. Google is a great man. I googled shortest living creature, and the mayfly is the shortest living creature. 24 hours, God love them. Mayflies have the shortest lifespan on earth. They spend most of their lifetime as nymphs. The one and only purpose of mayflies are a reproduction. Within this short period of life, they form groups and dance together on all available surfaces. So the god of the dance in the mayfly. So the sad reality, however, is that hundreds of animals and indeed plants are being made extinct in our times. And what is being lost of God in that? So Pope Francis's challenge is, the revolution of tenderness to embrace all of creation. He also says that a deep communion with the rest of nature cannot be real if our hearts lack tenderness, compassion, and concern for our fellow human beings, particularly for Pope Francis' concern for the weakest and most vulnerable. And that tenderness was expressed beautifully just after Pope Francis became Pope, when he visited the island of Lampedusa in Italy, off the coast of Italy, where thousands of migrants travel across the Mediterranean to reach safety. And he became very emotional in a way and upset, and he said, who has cried for these people, for the mothers and fathers who have gently carried their children onto boats in an attempt to get to safety? And that's the challenge, he says, for us. He says that everything is related, and we human beings are united as brothers and sisters on a wonderful pilgrimage, woven together by the love God has for each of his creatures, and which also unites us in fond affection with brother sun, sister moon, brother river, and mother earth. So you can kind of get the sense, this is really challenging stuff, isn't it? You'd want to be spending a lot of time before that image of the little hand and the big hand to be able to do it. It's not easy. So in both Evangelii Gaudium and in Laudato Si, in those two documents on the care of the earth and the joy of the gospel, the connection is made between human and divine tenderness and solidarity. Now, he does exactly the same in Misericordia Vultus, in the Bull of Indiction for the Year of Mercy. And I'm not going to go through all of these. It's just to say that it's very clear that Pope Francis's use of the image of a mother with her baby is a really important one for him. He says that God's love for us gushes forth from the depths naturally, full of tenderness and compassion. And he uses the word indulgence. Would you ever use that word to describe God? Indulgence, that he's indulgent. It's a mad word in a way. But that's what God is for us, indulgent. He says the challenge is that mercy is the very foundation of the church's life. All of her pastoral activity should be caught up in the tenderness she makes present to believers. Nothing in her preaching and in her witness to the world can be lacking in mercy. So that's really challenging in terms of what Jesse was saying earlier and in terms of that spectrum. And again, he turns to Mary in the Bull of Indiction. My thoughts now turn to the Mother of Mercy. May the sweetness of her countenance watch over us this holy year, so that all of us may discover the joy of God's tenderness. And hopefully that's what we've discovered. So what Pope Francis writes in The Joy of Love, the document we're looking at today, isn't new. It's there in everything that he has said and everything that he's written up to this point. And in terms of Amoris Laetitia, it's there as well. And it's there in these words. He talks about presence. He talks about fruitfulness. He talks about education, compassion, complexity, pastoral supports, and perspective. And he does all of this in the context of discernment. Those are the chapters of Amoris Laetitia. And in each of those, there's aspects of tenderness that he covers. So, for example, in The Light of the World, in essence, what he's giving is a history of God's tenderness. The experiences and challenges of families, he's naming the shadow and the light. Looking to Jesus, the vocation of the family, he's saying how the gaze of Jesus can inform and reform our thinking. Love and Marriage, that beautiful chapter 4. A lot of people say if you only read one part of The Joy of Love, read chapter 4. Love Made Fruitful, how we dream of our children before they're even born. And Pope Francis, in a beautiful homily yesterday, actually said exactly the same thing, but he said that before God made us, he dreamed of us. Isn't that beautiful? That he dreamed, not, and he was very specific, not in a general sense, he dreamed of each one of you individually. He talks about some pastoral perspectives towards a better education of children. And again, what Jesse was saying in terms of journeying with children and being aware of where they're on their journey. He uses that word discerning there in chapter 8, and he talks in terms of the spirituality of marriage and the family. And in both documents on the care of our common home and the joy of the gospel, he does exactly the same in terms of format. He ends all of those with a spirituality. So he's saying all of these things that we're challenging ourselves to do and to be in our parishes, in our church, in our world, are only possible if we have a spirituality rich enough and a relationship with God firm enough to allow us to be different and to be different with one another. So there are some chapters in Amoris Laetitia. Now, this is a lot of text, but I think it would be good for you to get a sense of where the revolution of tenderness is here. So he talks in chapter 1 about the tenderness of an embrace. Against the backdrop of love so central to the Christian experience of marriage and the family, another virtue stands out, and the other one obviously is love, one often overlooked in the world of frenetic and superficial relationships. It is tenderness. Now, isn't it interesting? The two probably biggest issues we have in the modern world are busyness and the superficiality of our lives can be countered with tenderness. It would be worth sitting with that. I think as a parent, it would be worth me sitting with it so that when I am finding myself, as it takes me 2.5 hours to put my second little girl to bed because she's hyper, it would be worth me, instead of getting annoyed and upset with her, allowing that to be a prayer of tenderness. Mind you, it might take 5 hours instead of 2.5 hours. But you know what I'm saying? So where can we, within our lives, our ordinary lives, build in this sense of God's tenderness? He says that our teaching in marriage and the family cannot fail to be inspired and transformed by this message of love and tenderness. Otherwise, it becomes nothing more than the defense of a dry and lifeless doctrine. So exactly what Jesse was saying at the beginning, where are we? And what Pope Francis is saying is that in terms of those extremes, the one thing that's going to draw us into the middle is tenderness. That is what will draw us into the middle. He talks in chapter 3 about the model of Christ, and he invites us to spend time with the gaze of Jesus. Once we have a sense of how Jesus looks on us and at us, we can then look at others in that way. He talks in chapter 4, that beautiful hymn. Now, I found chapter 4 really, really challenging. And he says that all of what's suggested in chapter 4, and it's almost like a to-do list or a how-to-be list for married couples, he says that all of this presumes that we have known a love that is prior to any of our own efforts. I think that's really, and I know I'm repeating it because it's really important that we get this, that a love that constantly opens doors promotes and encourages if we accept that God's love is unconditional, that the Father's love cannot be bought or sold, that we will become capable of showing boundless love and forgiving others even if they have wronged us. Otherwise, he says, our family life will no longer be a place of understanding, support and encouragement, but rather one of constant tension and mutual criticism. So it's very practical. In chapter 4, he says marriage is the icon of God's love for us. And in chapter 28, he says that the aesthetic experience of love is expressed in that gaze which contemplates other persons as ends in themselves, even if they are infirm, elderly, or physically unattractive. We're all really physically attractive in this room, so that should make it much easier. So it is really, really important that, you know, that gaze of love that we receive from Christ is what we give back to others. And it's very challenging as a wife and a mother, particularly as a wife, to do that because there are jobs to be done. So that's what we're challenged to look at. You know, what is it actually like in families? And it's sometimes very, very different. I like the chapter on chapter 5. He talks about our children, and he does talk about this beautiful image of a mother dreaming about her children. And he says, a mother who watches over her child with tenderness and compassion helps him or her to grow in confidence and to experience that the world is a good and welcoming place. This helps the child to grow in self-esteem and in turn to develop a capacity for intimacy and empathy. It's very like, isn't it very like what Jean Vanier said? That the love of a mother and a father builds the child up. He talks about presence. I'm not going to go through this very long text here, but basically what he's saying is put away the mobile phones, put away the computers, turn off the tellies, and be present, because it's that presence that will demonstrate how marriage and family life is an icon of God's love. So what are the implications? This is the challenging one. We cannot forget that mercy is not only the working of the Father, it becomes a criterion for knowing who his true children are. In a word, we are called to show mercy because mercy was first shown to us. That's simply put. And he says, to counter anyone who would accuse him in The Joy of Love of being woolly in any way, this is not sheer romanticism or a lukewarm response to God's love, which always seeks what is best for us. All of her pastoral activities should be caught up in the tenderness which she shows to believers. Nothing in her preaching and her witness to the world can be lacking in mercy. So it's very challenging. I'm going to finish up now with these two word clouds. And the last question, which I'm going to ask you to spend a few minutes with. It's question 6 there. Is there anything that has touched you about what Jesse said or what I said so far that about God's love for you? How are you with that? Do you believe it? And some people will find that harder to believe than others. I was saying to Jesse that my father is 93, and thank God he's alive and well and hearty, but he can't get his head around the idea of a God of love, because he was brought up in the 1920s and 30s, pre-Vatican II, where God was something entirely different and someone entirely different. So he's on that journey of trying to uncover it. So some people will find this more challenging than others. And then, in terms of anything you've heard, what is the challenge here in terms of your life and your work in your parish? And I'm going to leave it at that. And thank you very much for listening to me.